Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, this is a one-on-one with the great Henry Winkler. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
This is about something that lights your fire when nothing else will.
This is the Mark Divine Show. This show, we're going to discover and dive in and discuss what makes the world's most inspirational, compassionate, and resilient leaders so courageous.
Transform the nature and functioning of our own brain for the better.
Go put your virtues in action. Be the best version of yourself.
Life is a practice. Day by day, get wiser and stronger and grow.
How do you understand enough about your own mind and psychology and emotions, and how you develop a reflective awareness practice to actually get in the driver's seat of your own mind?
We go in-depth with people from all walks of life. Martial arts grandmasters, meditative monks, CEOs, military leaders, stoic philosophers, proud survivors, and more. Every episode turns our guest experience into actionable insights that you can learn from to lead a life filled with compassion and courage.
I started putting all these little tools in my pocket, started to reflect a lot and meditate.
There has to be a balance between movement and rest.
It all starts with us. We cultivate these qualities in ourselves. We become a beacon of light for others in the world. Please join us on the journey. The Mark Divine Show. Hoo-yah.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Henry Winkler. And now, a man who's never jumped the shark, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on the choice. We got a mandate. Get it on. And welcome to a one-on-one discussion with the great Henry Winkler. Good to see you again, my friend.
You know what? We were just talking about how long it has been. I sent you fan letters when you were on the radio. When was that? In the 80s?
It feels like it, but it was the 90s, like mid-ish, early 90s.
There you go. You know, so close to the 80s.
I know. Just one decade passed. And, you know, so I told this story to many people over many years who said to me, what was your first big kind of celebrity moment? Like, you know, when did you realize that you'd arrived? And I thought, you know, it was backstage at a K-Rock event, Acoustic Christmas, probably like 94. And I was walking around backstage and there was a group surrounding Henry Winkler. And I heard him say, "Where's Mr. Burcham?" And I was walking by, and that was my character name. And I said, I heard it. And I was like, "Oh, I'm Mr. Burcham." And Henry Winkler shook my hand with two hands and said, "Nobody can do what you do." And I, as a guy growing up in the Valley, grew up raised on Happy Days, always loved Night Shift, always followed Henry Winkler's career. I was a carpenter 10 minutes ago. I was still probably a carpenter at the time. And I was like, the Fonz knows who I am and appreciates me. And that was my aha moment.
You know what? I'll tell you something. First of all, was that one where I think I introduced Weezer?
Probably, yes.
Okay. So now that's what's happening in your body. In my body at that time, honest to God, same event, same moment, I bring my children because they love music and they love Weezer. And it's dark on the stage. And at that time in the 90s, it was very difficult to get hired as an actor because I had just finished 10 years of the Fonz. And I was, they loved me, people loved me. But, you know, he was the Fonz. And so I walked out and I was looking for my spot. So my head was down. The light came up. I raised my head to say, ladies and gentlemen, Weezer, because I had, as the Fonz, danced to Weezer, or they had a video using Happy Days set, right?
Yes, a very athletic, kind of a Russian dance that you had done.
Now, that Russian dance I learned because in the sixth grade, my parents took me to the Museev Russian Ballet where they did the Kazatsky. And I was elevated, lifted out of my chair, levitated because the energy on that stage of those men dancing just connected with me. And I taught myself a bastardized version of it, which I used on Happy Days, dancing in a fight for Joni or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there we were. I'm backstage. I shake your hand. You were so unbelievably great. Not that you're not now, but at that moment, you were so funny as that character on the radio. I walk out. I lift my head and the audience cheers. And I'm telling you, I thought to myself, oh, my God, I'm not dead. Now, a lot of facts in that story, but I just think your psychology at that moment and my psychology at that moment exactly in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. For me, it was the very early first trimester birth of my career comedically. Yes. And in your head, your best days were behind you. It was you're forever the Fonz. So do we want the Fonz in our
maybe
movie?
Maybe we'll never work again.
Right. Right. So there we were at that one moment in time with me sort of leaving the womb and you entering a retirement village in your head.
And let me just tell you, I could never get the golf cart to work.
So I've always been interested in you, and I've always been interested in your career. And I went back and watched Night Shift last night in preparation for this. And I always, you go into the little trepidation because you're like, I remember this movie making me laugh my ass off when I was 18, but did it hold up? Sometimes you see a movie, you build it up in your head, you don't see it for a long time, and it didn't go as well. It wasn't as funny as you recalled or whatever. And not only did it hold up very well, still super funny, young Michael Keaton before anyone.
His first film.
And you must have known there was something there because he just
Well, let me tell you
scenes.
About that there. We auditioned every young actor in Hollywood. Everybody came. And
it's a Ron Howard film, right?
This is a Ron Howard, his first movie for a major studio. He has done Roger Corman low budget movies that he had to be in if he was going to direct them.
Eat My Dust. Movies
Eat
like
My
that.
Dust. Grand Theft Auto.
Macon County Line or something like that.
Oh my God. And all he wanted was to be a director. He left Happy Days as an actor in order to pursue directing. So the last person to come was Michael Keaton. I'm telling you, in 30 seconds, he opened his mouth. I looked at Ron. Ron looked at me, and we stopped the audition. He had the role because that wonderfulness that exists today in everything he does was there in the moment.
Oh, we have the video of you introducing Weezer from 1994?
Audio,
sorry.
Oh, wow.
I have three things to say to you. The first is I want you to have an outrageously safe and peaceful holiday season. The second is, for the first time in history, I have credibility in my house with my three kids. Because I'm on MTV. My children are here tonight to enjoy one of the great new bands of the 90s. I want you to get crazy for Weezer! Ah.
Probably never heard that before, huh?
You know what? It was like, I'm telling you, Adam, I swear to you, it is completely touching. First of all, to your producer, thank you for finding that. It was so important to know that I had not faded into dust, that I was still viable. And I, not only that, but also, you know what? I could introduce bands.
Yeah, that was
pretty, I thought I did a pretty good job.
Pretty good hype man.
I only did it one other time in Milwaukee. I introduced Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros.
Can't say that I know that band.
I thought that they were the bee's knees. I thought that when I first heard them on NPR radio, I thought I had died and gone to heaven.
So you would listen to K-Rock back in the day, maybe because your kids liked K-Rock, and you knew my character, Mr. Burcham, but you didn't know anything else about me. You just knew that this was some guy who might be a shop teacher or was a comedian who also was a shop teacher. Like, did you have any thoughts?
Oh, yes. Here is my only thought, Adam. This person is so funny. I need to tell him how he is heard in my house. I believe when you see something that you like, you let that person know. The last person I wrote was Taylor Sheridan, the creator, director, and writer of both Yellowstone and 1883.
Mm-hmm. So you write letters. I mean,
I do.
You essentially write fan letters.
I do.
I love that story.
I do.
So let's go back with you a little bit. And people should know that Barry is the show. Season 3 premieres this Sunday. That's April 24th.
I'm so excited, Adam. I am so excited. We started, we shot the pilot in 2016. That was year one. Year three starts this Sunday. That's how long it takes for the process. Oh, my goodness gracious. But I will just say it here. This is the truth. The most dramatic work I have ever done in my entire career, from June 30th, 1970, is in this season of Barry on HBO.
Wow. 52-year hiatus from the most important work. What was I remember you way back with Stallone in Lords of Flatbush. Was that was that you and Stallone back in the 70s?
Now, Stallone, you know, everybody thinks, oh, look at this. He's a big toughie. He looks like a marshmallow. You know, he's kind of flabby and everything. So Stallone is an incredibly smart, astute, insightful, and funny man. So we do this movie together. We get like $2,000 a year for the year's work to finally make this movie. I come out here and I'm very lucky. I get the funds. All of a sudden, I get a phone call in my apartment. Henry is Sly, and my wife, his first wife, Sasha, and their dog, this slobbery bull mastiff. My car broke down. I don't know what to do. I said, don't worry. You stay right there. I'll come and get you. I got him, his wife, their possessions, his dog, into an apartment off of Sunset Boulevard, I think like on El Camino or whatever. I don't know what it's called. Up in, you know, off of Sunset Boulevard. I got him settled into his apartment. He gave me a script. He said, I want you to take the script, see what you could do. I take it to ABC. I said, I'm telling you, here's a guy I worked with. Here's the script. They buy the script. All of a sudden, they say to me, but you know what? We're going to change the writer. I said, oh, my God. I call Sly. I said, hey, the good news is they bought the script outright. They want to change the writer. He said, don't let them do that to me. I said, okay. I went back to ABC. I said, I know you don't do this. Here is all the money back. I need that script. They said, no, no, no. We really don't do that. I said, I understand you don't do that. I really need you to do that. I really need you to give me back the script. Here is all the money back. Just please give me the script. I get the script back. Now, certainly because I was a star on their one of the most important series at that time for them, ABC, didn't hurt. They gave me back the script. I went to Sly. I said, here is the script. A year and a half later, Rocky came out.
That was the script for Rocky.
Yeah.
Wow. I've heard versions of the story, but I did not know there was a Henry Winkler sighting in the story. I just thought someone bought it, and then they wanted someone else to star in it, or they wanted to rewrite it, and he didn't do it. And it's a very good tale of staying true to your vision, and even if times are tough, you know, not going for the short money and the quick hits.
Yes,
because he could have used it back then.
Oh my god, absolutely. He came to find his fortune here, and he did. But you know, I sold it like that, and then they said we're going to change the writer, and you literally watched his heartbreak. He said, please, you don't let them do that to me. And then the rest, it went down exactly like that.
How did the Fonz, I've often thought about the Fonz.
Yes.
The Fonz isn't Jewish, but you're Jewish.
Yes.
You're a little bit undersized for a hoodlum.
What are you saying?
I would only say it over Zoom. I would never do it if you were in the room. It seems an odd choice.
Let me just tell you. I am 5'6" and a half.
And with the boots, you're almost 5'8" and a half.
That's true.
So
there go the boots.
It seemed an odd choice to pick a tough guy who was looking up to a lot of people when he was threatening them. How did that come about? It just didn't seem like a logical casting.
I'll tell you something. There are two things about that. One is I finally realized how to define cool, which is being authentic. And I was able to be completely, but to a millimeter of my body and skin, I was able to be authentic because in the audition, I changed my voice. And changing my voice literally, I mean, a cosmic key unlocked my imagination. And then all of a sudden, size didn't matter. Because I'm telling you, Adam, no matter where I went, people would say to me, oh, I thought you were much taller. So it is the essence of what you do that makes you powerful, not accoutrement or height.
So we'll go back to the beginning. Your family flees here to the United States as World War II is starting to heat up. Your family's Jewish. They see which way the wind is blowing. I have a Hungarian grandfather who did these same things about 1939, decided he didn't like which way the wind was blowing.
Yes.
And so you guys picked up the Winkler family. Were you from Germany?
My father and mother came from Berlin. They had a 6-week work visa to come here to America. My father, this is an incredible story. My father took jewelry from my mother and from his mother, bought a box of chocolate, melted the chocolate down, poured it over each piece of jewelry in the box, put the box under his arm, and every time they passed a Nazi checkpoint who said, "Are you taking any vitals, any single value out of Germany?" He said, "No, open my bags, check my pockets, nothing." And it was all in the chocolate in the box that he then pawned and eventually was able to buy back once he started his new life in America.
So he pawned it in Germany or pawned it in America?
In New York City.
So you got on a boat back then.
Yeah.
Came to New York and...
Ellis Island.
I mean, what a story. Melted the chocolate down, got the stuff, pawned it, got some cash, started a business.
Right. He started a business that he had already worked at in Germany, which was importing and exporting lumber.
Mm-hmm.
And he became the middleman, and he wanted me to take over the business, which I understand why, but I wanted to be an actor. And on my oldest son's bar mitzvah, I gave him his great grandfather's pocket watch that came out of Germany in chocolate.
Oh, you dipped it, it came in chocolate, and then he dipped it, and then he broke it. Wow.
He dipped it in chocolate in order to cover it. So when he opened the box, it looked like there were pieces of chocolate.
Yeah.
Not the jewelry.
It's got a little Pulp Fiction angle to it with the pocket watch.
Oh, meanwhile, I just went for a tour and I did a part in a show in Israel, and I had lunch with Quentin Tarantino for 2 hours, the first time I ever met him.
Wow.
So I'm dating my wife 44 years ago, and we are in a movie theater in Westwood, where UCLA is.
Mm-hmm.
We're watching Pulp Fiction. This is while we're dating. And I said, "Well, I can't sit in the middle. I have to sit toward the back." She said, "Oh, why?" I said, I don't know how to explain this to you. So we sit down, and all of a sudden, Samuel Jackson, the man you want to say your name anywhere, says, "You know, like the Fonz."
Oh, right.
And the entire audience turns around at the same time. Some of them stand up and walk back and want to shake my hand. And I said, "This is why you don't sit in the middle of the theater."
Had to be pretty impressive when you're dating. Oh,
yeah, I tell you.
Yeah, that's... So they land in New York in 39, 40, yeah, somewhere in there.
39. You know, the very same time we're living in right now in America.
And you are immediately want to perform. I mean, you're the class clown.
I know, yes. But I'm a class clown not only because I want to perform. I'm a class clown because I am shamed by the fact that my dyslexia affects every ability to learn any subject. Yeah. I'm in the bottom 3% academically in America.
Yeah, I didn't learn to read or write for a long period of time. I'm not sure if I was dyslexic, but I couldn't read or write either. And I ended up taking the same sort of verbal road. I didn't want to read it. I wanted to say it. And it was also a nice distraction from my horrible grades and maybe a weird way to prove your intelligence on some level versus just what's on your report card.
That's a very good point. I never thought about that.
I never thought about it until now either, but I now kind of think about why was I doing that? And maybe I was saying to people, "I'm not this dullard you think I am based on my grades or my inability to read." Yeah. But you didn't find out you're dyslexic until, I mean, it really wasn't a thing back then. You didn't really find out until
later.
You
know what, Adam? Here's the thing. I don't care that it wasn't a thing. And I'm just coming to this now. I mean, this is an actual thought that I'm dealing with at this, right at this moment. I don't care that it wasn't a thing. People didn't understand it. They didn't know it was wiring. The very people who were punishing me and yelling at me and berating me for not doing well in school are the assholes who gave it to me. But be that as it may, you look at your child. Are you a parent?
Yes, I have twins.
Okay. How old?
15.
Okay. So when they're younger, you look at them and you know something is off. Something is not completely working. Not you necessarily, but you know, a kid. I don't know what it is, but I do know that my job now is to help that child solve or ease that problem. Not go, "You're stupid."
Yeah. Well, was this the school? Was this your parents?
Both.
Both. Yeah. It sounds, I mean, I guess sometimes when you become a parent, you picture physically abusing, sexually abusing, and you go, "That's insane. It's insane." It feels like I'd sooner kick a puppy in the ribs. You know, it feels insane to do that. And you're right. We do get a little caught up in this historical thing where they go, "Well, they didn't know what dyslexia was back then, or they didn't diagnose it, or they didn't have medication for it." Fine. But you did know the person was struggling.
Yes. My point.
How about a hug? It was incredible. They just went, "You know, you're dumb and there's something wrong with you and you need to try harder. But even if you try harder, it might not be enough to overcome this deficit of being dumb." And that was,
you're never going to overcome it. You're only going to learn to negotiate it.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting that we were so unsophisticated that I've said it before. Like, my son has friends and some of them are funny and they're quick-witted. And you can just tell there's a kind of dexterity to them vocally and the way their brain works, you know?
Sure.
And if somebody said, "Can you believe this guy's a D-minus student?" I would say, "Well, he may not be accelerating in the classroom, but obviously the kid is sharp. I mean, he's a smart kid based on our conversations." They didn't make that delineation back then. They were just, "You're dumb, and then you need to kind of be quiet." So is this a resentment that you've had over the years for family and faculty alike, or did you come to terms with it, or did your parents come around at some point?
There is a woman who is 95 right now living in Massachusetts. Her name is Dr. Charlotte Lindgren. She was my English teacher at college where I applied to 28 colleges. I got into one. Emerson, which is, thank God, a wonderful school in Boston. I think they took me as a project. But she saw me, and I will never forget her as long as I live. Miss Adolph, on the other hand, who I think was related, was my fourth grade teacher. And
related to the other Adolph?
I think so.
Yes.
She couldn't be dead enough.
Yeah, I know. And in your parents, was there any, you know, sometimes you hear the story that, you know, the dad was a businessman, but the mom, she loved the theater. She loved performing. And sometimes there's a one side has that gene or at least is supportive of that.
My parents did not get it.
Did they ever get it?
It was a wrestling team sport. They never got it. Here's what happened. I'll tell you what they got. They got that their son became famous. And then all of a sudden, there was a reason to be proud, but I didn't need it then.
Right.
I didn't care that they were proud when I figured out how to be successful on my own.
And were they around long enough? I mean, obviously they saw Happy Days. They saw that crazy success.
It was so scary to leave my apartment that I had the fan mail delivered right around the street from the Laugh Factory on Laurel Avenue was where my apartment was. You know, one of those California apartments around a pool.
Yeah, in Hollywood off of Sunset.
Yeah. Across the street from Schwab's where all the stars were found, you know, discovered.
Right.
So I had all the letters delivered, 50,000 letters a week delivered to my apartment. And I would try and read as many as I could because it was so scary to leave my apartment when I wasn't working. And I came across a letter. Yeah, we think you should have the funds on the TV more. You should write bigger stories for the funds. My mother wrote a fan letter to ABC. And I found it in this pile of fan mail.
Wow. So she did care on some level. Was it like an old school stoic dad and mom who didn't believe you should heap praise on the son or the daughter? Was there some of that going on, like a generational thing?
There might have been. I never asked any questions because there was always so much storm and drang in my apartment that I would listen to music to turn my brain back to some kind of normalcy when they would yell about something. And then I would go in my room and I would walk in a circle like I was churning butter. And I thought to myself, what is going on? What are they yelling about?
How old? I mean, this is when you're.
Oh, my God. I was 10. I was 15. I was 18. And I would listen to, you know, rock and roll. I would listen to Paul Anka. I would listen to opera. I would listen to Harry Belafonte.
So,
and that would calm me down.
And did so your parents stayed together and just sort of fought and did battle?
Yeah, but you know, mostly the battle was at me. I don't remember hearing them. I'll tell you what I do remember. 14 years old, we go to Boston to visit cousins. And I am somehow fixed up with this young lady who's a little older than I am, but I am smitten. And I went to the movies with her. Maybe we just had a Coke or something, but she jumped into my heart. I wrote her letters. And, you know, I was like the joke where I would be, knee deep in paper crumpled up because I had made a mistake and started it again because I couldn't spell. And so I didn't want to cross out a letter or I thought of a better way to say the sentence. And I finally sent this letter off to this young girl in Massachusetts. And I never heard back. And if I was heartbroken. And I went into my father's top drawer in his, you know, credenza in his bedroom, looking for something. And I found all the letters that young lady wrote me that were never delivered.
To you. All those, how long? Wow. I mean, all right. How long a period of time had gone by?
Years.
Oh, years. Wow. Now, why would one do that? Because
I'll tell you why.
Yes.
They thought I should not be distracted because I would get geometry if I just concentrated.
So they did not want you to find burgeoning love because of that. All right. So your parents don't sound like the greatest parents, but you are exquisitely nice. I always bring that up. I use you as an example. There are people in Hollywood that famously aren't nice, but Henry Winkler famously is nice. So,
yeah, but you know what? I don't, yes. Adam, I don't think of myself as nice. I think of myself as grateful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, oh my God, I'm living. I'm 76 years old. I'm living my dream. I'm doing this great character on Barry that starts again for the third season. And then a little while later, on June 28th, we start filming the fourth season. Oh, my God. So I'm grateful. And, you know, maybe that is misconstrued as nice. I don't know.
Well, it'll do in place of nice. I mean, yeah. Grateful is about the best way you can go through life. But so many people don't take that road. They take a road
that I am
a little more bitter, some resentment. Did you ever sort of make amends, or did your parents ever make amends with you? Or was it just one of those sort of relationship at a distance sort of thing as an adult?
Well, I moved 3,000 miles away. So now I have poked the balloon, and a lot of that resentment and anger has dripped out. And, you know, I am grateful for the education. I'm grateful, you know, that I lived in a nice apartment on the west side of New York. I admire that my father picked up, moved to a new country with a new language with my mother, and started again, and was able to create this company that bought and sold lumber, Ernst Seidelman Corporation. So I really do see all of that, and it's pretty wonderful. But as human beings, to me, that was tough.
Well, let's take a quick break, and I'll tell you about our friends at LifeLock. Tax season is always crazy, but it'll feel a little less stressful if you take care of yourself. Now, you don't get the LifeLock, and you get scammers pretending to be the IRS, asking for personal info, bank accounts. They want you to wire them money. Don't fall for it. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cyber criminals could harm your finances and your good credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. Look, if you get into any kind of situation and you're with LifeLock, you'll have access to a dedicated restoration specialist. It's the best. It's LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
So your career is really having a renaissance now, if we could use that word that way. And there was a time, like, we're hearkening back, and I have that picture of us at the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas from 1994 that'll flash up on the screen for you, because you'll probably get a kick out of it. It's Kevin and Bean. It's
They were great, too. I love doing their show. They had me come, and I was interviewed by them a lot.
There's Kevin and Bean. There's Frank Murphy, the producer. There's Jimmy Kimmel. Do you recognize Jimmy Kimmel?
I do, and I'm doing his show this week.
That's right. That's Lightning. And there's me to the far right, dressed up as Mr. Burcham at the time.
Absolutely.
So it must have been. It definitely was a live event, because I had to dress up as Mr. Burcham, because nobody knew who Mr. Burcham was. And I didn't really look like Mr. Burcham when I was 30 years old. They were picturing, you know, salt and pepper and, you know, mid-50s shop teacher. So at that point, there was a lot of typecasting, and it was hard to break out from the Fonz, even though Happy Days was now canceled and in your rearview mirror. Was there some doldrums in your career for that period, or
there
some period?
Years. I think about 9 or 10 years of doldrums.
And then what broke you out of it?
I got a television movie called Absolute Strangers about a real story about a young couple on Long Island. And not only had acting gestated in me for those years, I couldn't do it. During those years, I produced MacGyver and Sightings and So Weird for the Disney Channel. I sold those shows. I directed a little. I won an Emmy for an after school special starring Scott Baio.
Scott Baio, Chachi. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a wonderful actor. He really is. We have different political points of view, but he's a member of my family.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's been on the show a few times.
Yeah. Yeah, he's wonderful. But he was a wonderful acting partner, especially when Ron Howard left after 7 years. I was like in this delicious dessert acting with Ron. It was just like so simple. And Scott stepped up and took the mantle, and he was a wonderful acting partner for the next few years. He really was.
At the height of Happy Days, and I've said it a few times on this show, but when these shows were hits, when they had three networks and there were getting a 40 share or 37 or whatever it was.
48.
And there was the population was, 210 million citizens versus 330. Now, everyone knew who you were. And it had to make it impossible to essentially go out to dinner or to a movie. I mean, just to walk down the street. Did you like it? Did you hate it? Did you feel threatened by it?
I saw it completely practically. What was happening? The show was constantly going. I was making a living. I was feeding my family. I was giving them an education. And people were unbelievably warm to me. I was never met with hostility. I was met by street gangs in New York City on the street who surrounded my wife and I and then realized and said, oh, wait a minute. Are you Fonzie? All right, back up, everybody. Give this man some breathing room. And then they escorted me to my hotel.
Wow.
So it was like that. It was amazing. It's still amazing.
So did you have, after Happy Days wrapped up, there were some doldrums from a performing standpoint, from an acting standpoint. A lot of people look back. Sometimes they get a little bitter. They go, oh, if I wasn't typecast as this, then I would be getting all these major roles now. But for you, it was always a mitzvah.
But here's the thing. I went through depression. I went through, not clinical depression like some of the people have that are. It's so painful, so debilitating. I was really low. I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to work again. That's why I started to produce and direct. And eventually I started writing these children's books. And Lynn Oliver and I have just finished our 38th novel for kids.
And all from a guy who is dyslexic.
Who was told I would never achieve. Yeah.
Yeah. Does that sort of, that fire sort of compel you? That fact that, the teachers, parents, the naysayers. Do you still at 76 kind of feel that thing of I got to get up and prove them wrong today?
Yeah. Yeah. I just said to my wife recently, I said, you know what just hit me? All those people who didn't want to hire me, all of those people I thought were so cool in, those Armani suits at the studios, I'm here and they are not.
Yeah. Well, people don't realize that show business is really a marathon. I think they think it's kind of a dash for cash or a sprint. And, you know, when I first, right about the time I met you, maybe about a year later after the time I met you, Bob Ringwald, who was Molly Ringwald's dad, was a very interesting guy, blind musician, played Dixieland, interesting dude. I knew him growing up. The Ringwalds grew up the street from me in North Hollywood.
Do you ever see them now?
Yeah, I speak to them on occasion. It's a rare occasion, but
Do you have any idea how is Molly?
I think she's in New York. We can look, and I think she's a singer. So she's doing cabaret stuff, and she started as a singer with Bob's Dixieland band. And she like dropped an album when she was five or something. I mean, producer Chris can find it or see it, but she was a performer. A very interesting story. That a very young son who died in childhood, who was the star of the family. He was going to be the big singer breakout. He died, and Molly sort of filled his shoes. But I talked to him, must have been the later, you know, 96. And I think Molly had hit really hard with all the big movies she was doing in the 80s. And she was on the cover of Life magazine and Time magazine. And he'd seen her career sort of flatten out after that, because she was as big as they got. And he just said to me, show business, man, here today, gone tomorrow. And I said, not me, Bob. I'm hanging around. And he said, well, good luck to you, you know. And it was about that time that I realized I can't leave it in the judge's hands. I got to go for the knockout. I have to control my own material. I have to build something. I have to create. No one's going to cast me. I need to create something for me to be in. It's sort of my basketball. I got to play in the pickup game. But if I just show up, I'm not going to get picked. And I always had that in my head. She sang on a few Disney albums in 1980. Molly did. Also recorded at age six. I Want to Be Loved by You. It's on the album with his dad's, with Bob's, who, like I said, he recently passed the Dixieland album. If you want to know the rest of the story, is Paul Harvey.
Love Paul Harvey.
Me too. And I love those, you know, and that man was Eli Whitney or whatever. And it was like,
it was great.
The story, but he could do one on you. His parents were German immigrants. They fled the Holocaust. They landed in Manhattan with nothing but the jewelry that had been dipped in the chocolate. Their young son, who was dyslexic but undiagnosed at the time, went on to be ridiculed by teachers, parents, faculty, and family members alike. That man moved to Hollywood and turned out to be the Fonz. And now you know the rest of the story.
Oh, my God. I would listen. I look forward to him.
I know. I think he was from the Chicago area, as I recall. When I was before Chicago, I went to Wisconsin and did a show at a theater there and walked across the street and saw your statue, the Fonz's statue, Milwaukee. Right next to the river.
Unbelievable. Now people have tied the Ukrainian flag around my neck.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The statue, that is.
The statue.
All right, we'll take ourselves a quick break. We'll be right back with the great Henry Winkler. Quick break for a new segment where I get to express a little gratitude for a change for someone who's played a significant role in my journey. Brought to you by Hyundai. I'm going to go with former editor-in-chief of the Los Angeles Times, Shelby Coffey. Dear, dear friend, he's away from the Times now, went back to Washington, D.C. to run a museum or a library or something important. But I was at a crossroads in my life. I was living in a house with three dudes, renting it in La Crescenta. I was working as a boxing coach in the mornings for $20 a class, and taught about 5-6 classes a week. Had one or two private students. Shelby was one of my private students, and he liked me. And I quit Acme Theater. I wasn't doing anything creatively or comedically. And he was this guy who, you know, he comes from this background. He's got a pedigree. I mean, how do you get to be the editor-in-chief of the Los Angeles Times, you know? And back before, you know, this is when it was the Los Angeles Times. It was a big, prestigious job. So he was married to his wife as a physician. They were just those kind of upper crust people. But he was laid back and cool and had a sense of humor. And he knew I knew how to teach boxing, and he very much liked boxing. So I used to teach him, and he'd come to my class at 7 in the morning before he went into the Times. And I'd do a class with him on a I'd do a private with him on a Saturday or something. And sometimes after we'd do our private, we'd go out and have lunch out in Pasadena. And, you know, he'd be like, "You're funny. You should write that down. You're smart," you know. And I was like, this guy, there's nobody I knew from my world that knew anyone like him or anyone from his world. But I was like, "Really?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah, man." And he started to inculcate this thing in me, which is, I'm not so different. I could do this. Just because I was a horrible student, my parents are for crap, and everything was a mess, it doesn't mean I couldn't be successful. He's telling me I can. He's telling me I'm smart. He's telling me I'm funny. And he really started, like, lit a bit of a fire under me. And it was really 10 minutes later that I had some momentum, and I met Jimmy and got into radio, and it all just took off from there. But I thank Shelby for that. And I know we're all on a journey in life, and Hyundai is here to think of everything to make your journey easier, more comfortable, more enjoyable. For example, well thought out interior details, ergonomics and styling for comfort and utility for wherever your journey takes you. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new nut hath arrived. April ushers in the return of not just spring, but a new Adams Monthly Nut. This month includes a sample pack of Brewpub Jerky, expertly crafted to drink with beer. We've also got a sample pack of renewed Chaga Chino to make sure your coffee isn't just giving you jitters in the morning. When you're putting shrooms or snickerdoodle coffee mate in your cup of joe, make sure you rinse it after. This month, we've got a mug to remind you to do just that after you're done. And finally, you know the guys from Caviar Farm well enough by now. And this month, you'll get a $25 off coupon to be used site-wide at thecaviarfarm.com. We're not sure how we did it, but this entire box is just $25 at CorollaDrinks.com. Sign up for one or keep the shipments coming at CorollaDrinks.com. The Adam Carolla Show presents Henry Winkler's birthday cocktail party for October 30th. Let's see who's invited. Italian explorer and navigator Christopher Columbus just discovered the party. The second president of the United States, John Adams, is here. Let's welcome bodybuilder Charles Atlas. Actress Ruth Gordon is here. Vocalist from Jefferson Airplane, Grace Slick. From The Temptations, Otis Williams. From The Eagles, Timothy B. Schmidt. Kevin Pollak just joined the party. Let's welcome legendary Argentinian soccer player, Diego Maradona. From Cash Cab, Ben Bailey is here. And the daughter of the 45th President of the United States, Ivanka Trump. Henry Winkler is on the Adam Carolla Show.
All right, back with Henry Winkler. Such an interesting conversation.
Thank you. I
had a vague recollection of you writing me a fan letter from a million years ago, but my low self-esteem forces me to not recognize it. So I'd somehow pushed it out of my head. Right. Although I did remember meeting you backstage because that seared into my psyche.
Yeah. No, listen, that was a great moment. That was the second one, the second acoustic Christmas that I appeared at.
Well, the thing that was funny, I love the backstory because I was watching that episode of Happy Days when you were doing your version of the Russian dance.
And Yes.
And I remember looking at it. I went, that's really athletic. Like there's something there that wasn't somebody just handing you a script and going, do a Russian dance. Like Henry must have worked at that or trained at that or said to the writers, I can do this or some version of it. But
I said to the writers, I can do this. And they worked it in.
And then,
but what I really wanted was I wanted to do the what was authentic.
I think
someone must have been coming to the house because my dogs are going to say hello.
I do love the story behind the canvas windbreaker versus the leather jacket, which showed up in season two or three. And
they did not want me to wear leather because they thought I would be associated with crime and that people wouldn't watch.
That was season one, right?
That was season one. And by the 12th episode, I was able to wear the leather if I was in a scene with my bike.
Oh, right. Right.
But only then.
And how about, I was thinking about this the other day as I was thinking about you, the term jump the shark has entered the lexicon of American conversation. Like people just say that show's jump the shark. They'll say that energy drink has jumped the shark. The fact that that became a thing is kind of interesting, isn't it? In a weird way, part of your legacy.
It is America. Here is a guy sitting in his dorm at Michigan, at the university. They're watching me jump the shark in one of the episodes. And said, oh, well, now, you know, it means that something has overstayed its welcome. And they thought that Happy Days had gone too far, the Fonz water skiing, except that we were number one for like 4 or 5 years after that. So it didn't really matter to anybody.
Did you see the landscape of the TV sitcom sort of changing and evolving in that decade? That
I did not. I was never a great seer. No. All I know is that by the time Cosby came early, you know, when his show started, they had said the sitcom is dead. We can no longer do a sitcom and make it work.
Is this new iteration, or not really iteration, but Barry, is this a kind of cake and eat it too for you? I mean, did you like doing the in front of the studio audience, 3 or 4 camera versus single camera? Where are you at with that? As someone who's done
both? So September 1975, we went live in front of a live audience. And I think that was the first one that was shown on television. We were almost canceled because there were only 3 networks. And out of 100 shows, we were 48th. So we weren't really doing well. And Gary had the smart idea to go in front of a live audience. Ron had never, in all of his years, had ever worked in front of a live audience before. And he was, as always, amazing because it was like a duck to water. He didn't miss a beat. He was born to do it. And then we just shot up like a rocket.
Was Gary Marshall directing then?
Gary Marshall was producing and writing then. He had a staff of about 22, from 21-year-olds to 77-year-olds, so that there were jokes for everybody.
And so for you, you came out to L.A. to act. But
for
you,
1 month.
For 1 month.
I had enough money for 1 month.
And you wanted to focus on comedy? Was that always kind of your focus?
You know what? Comedy was my strongest point. But of course, like every idiot, you always think, huh, I want the thing that I don't do most of. You know, so I was looking for drama. I was not looking for a, when we went to Yale, we went to the Yale Drama School, and people said, you know, I don't know how you can do situational comedy. It goes against our aesthetic grain. And then, of course, when I got on one and it was successful, every actor that I knew at Yale showed up on my soundstage wanting to know how they could somehow figure it out.
Did you, so you came out to L.A. and you had a month's worth of rent and food money, and you were just going to audition for that and see if you could get something. And if you couldn't get something,
I would go home.
Back to New York?
Back to New York.
Back to the parents or where?
No, I had an apartment that I sublet from a wonderful actor, Louis Stadlin. And now here it is. You walk in, a big living room, a bathroom, a bedroom, and a kitchen with an eating area, $174 a month.
Where in Manhattan?
72nd Street and West End Avenue.
Wow.
Yeah.
God, imagine that today. And oh, so you would have gone back to New York and tried acting, but you would have had to get a day job, essentially?
No, I was really lucky because I got really good at commercials, so I could do plays for free at night.
So you'd go out, book commercials during the day, and then hone your craft that night.
Theater club, wherever, you know, in some basement in a church, you know, some, you know, very important Polish play.
Louis Stadlin was in The Sopranos, so I'm reading here. Yeah.
And he was also on Broadway. He played Groucho Marx.
And you booked Happy Days for that 1 month you were out in L.A.
I did. A week and a half later.
Wow. And that was it? Never went back?
Never went back.
And did your parents, did they come out at some point when you, you know, arrived, so to speak, on Happy Days?
They came, they visited the set. There are pictures I have with them still in the cloth jacket.
Yeah. Oh, really? So season one.
Season one and a half. Yeah.
And they got, was there a sense that they were just trying to kind of enjoy your celebrity with you or reclaim something?
Oh, I think they claimed it as their own. You know, all of a sudden they made jokes like, we are the co-producers of Henry Winkler.
Do you have siblings?
I have a sister who is 4 years older than I am and lives with her husband in New York in the apartment they've been in for 40 years.
What field did she get into?
Shopping. No, she was very active in the sisterhood of her synagogue.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. And did she come out of this sort of thing unscathed with the parents?
She had a different experience.
Right.
She had a totally different experience. First of all, being a girl was less expectation on a woman. And, you know, me being the boy.
Right. It was a little different back then. They expected her to get married and you to have some sort of career.
They used to call her first husband, what's his name? Because they never actually called him by his first name.
Your parents sound like hard asses, I must say.
I'm telling you, they were tough.
But it is, it has a context having to flee Germany as Jews in 1939.
You know, it does, and I am grateful, but...
But realistic. Yeah, there's also that thing I've dealt with a little bit with my parents where, they say, I have this thing where it's like, well, they had their own problems and we never had money and that kind of stuff. And it's like, I always go, yeah, but it doesn't cost any money to hug your kid and tell them they're going to have a good life or have a laugh in front of them or like go for a walk or something like
that. It's very important that I made a decision to be a different parent when I was a parent with Stacy.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the other thing, too, where there's I think sometimes we're maybe a little too forgiving when we say, well, they had it tough because his dad was a stern guy and he never hugged him. And so he was a disciplinarian so that he became that guy. And I'm always like, I got a different head on it. Mine is you got a front row seat to what that was like. Now, why are you bringing it to your next generation?
It is so true. When my parents and when my children, who are now 50, 41 and 38, and our grandchildren, when they were younger, my parents would come flying out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, right then and there, I would hear it. And I would say, you know what? I did not mean that. I'm going to back it up. This is the way I meant to say what was on my mind.
Interesting.
So, and I would do it every time.
It was in you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do a little overcompensating myself sometimes.
Well, listen, you said it. That was, I'm going to steal that. You had a front row seat to see what that was like and how damaging it could be. And man, you better remember that.
A inspirational note to go out on. Barry is the name of the show, of course, season 3 with Bill Hader, who's...
Did I tell you that it was on HBO?
HBO, coming out this Sunday, April 24th. And you can shoot Henry a tweet at HWinkler4Real. And if you want to comment or get in touch with him in one way or another. Henry, it's been too long. I'd love to have you back anytime you want to plug anything you want or just have a chat.
Yeah, this was a great chat. This was a really interesting chat. I mean, we talked about stuff, some of which I talk about and some which I haven't.
Well, that's always the goal, to see if we can
not
learn
always
things.
Squeezy.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I do want to talk to people about subjects. They're a little more off the beaten path, but they can be sensitive. And sometimes people react differently to it. But I will say this, talking to people 20 years ago, 25 years ago, interviewing people about subjects that were a little more personal, immediately there was a sort of wall that went up.
Yeah.
If there's one good thing about this time we're living in, I think people are much more open to sharing their experiences, hoping other people could hear that shared experience and maybe inspire them a little bit. Maybe there's a young Henry Winkler listening that could be uplifted a little bit through some of your words. And it's a different zeitgeist in our society.
That's an interesting, that is a very interesting point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching people just being interviewed about how they amassed their wealth or what kind of designer jeans they were wearing and, that kind of stuff. And we've gone to a different place and maybe in a world of, many things to complain about, maybe something we could salvage from this particular time is that people are much more open to sharing their experiences in a real thoughtful way. And I think you proved that here today, Henry Winkler.
Thank you. Well, be well and give my best at home.
I shall. You do the same. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Henry Winkler saying mahalo.
Mahalo.
You can watch this episode of The Adam Carolla Show at youtube.com/Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see The Ace Man. Get them now at adamcarolla.com.
Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at GEICO.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
Stream the biggest movies and TV shows for free on Pluto TV. Watch movies like Titanic and G.I. Joe: The Rise of Cobra, plus TV shows like CSI and Star Trek: The Next Generation. Starting this month, check out the 24/7 Stargate channel exclusively on Pluto TV. Plus hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows absolutely free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today. Stream the biggest movies and TV shows for free on Pluto TV. Watch movies like Titanic and G.I. Joe: The Rise of Cobra, plus TV shows like CSI and Star Trek: The Next Generation. Starting this month, check out the 24/7 Stargate channel exclusively on Pluto TV. Plus hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows absolutely free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today.